And I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut my cake hole. I had to.
Damn, Jamie, you are going to put Celine out of a job.
Apologies to everyone who had to listen to that, but I had to. If you didn't think I was going to do it, then you were wrong.
I was really hoping that you would.
Yeah.
Jamie, commit to the bit. Redacted. And in case it wasn't abundantly clear, today we are going to be discussing the 17th episode of Season 6 of Supernatural titled My Heart Will Go On. Jamie, what did you think?
It was a very fun episode.
Yes.
I also feel like it's actually, like, despite the fact it's kind of just, like, fun and silly, I think there's actually a lot of, like, plot stuff there. So, yes. Like, might jump straight into that if you're, like...
Oh, we're gonna start with that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, kick us off.
Okay, first up, I want to say, I feel like this episode at least partially proved me right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is at least partial confirmation that, yes, Crowley was after Purgatory for the souls. Like, I think that souls are obviously very much plot relevant. They're very much something that you can sort of utilize in the impending war
way back,
for power.
Way back when. I want to say, like, in and around the time we were recording Faith,
mm-hmm.
or, like, somewhere in, like, season one, you were asking questions about souls, and I was saying they become way more relevant in later seasons, and we kind of get to know a little bit more about what a soul kind of is and how it is utilized.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I was talking about. Yeah. Like, they are significantly plot relevant right now. Like, you are not wrong about that. I don't mind telling you, because I feel like they've basically told us at this point. Between previous episodes, the cold open, and then the focus on it here, like, yeah, they're important.
It's borderline confirmation. It's not coming out right and saying it, but they're certainly saying it.
For some reason, mm-hmm. I think we get the quote from Fate saying that, you know, you created 50,000 new souls for your war machine. Like,
yeah.
It implies that there is an inherent power. There is a reason why you would covet an additional 50,000 souls. Do you have any other plot thoughts outside of that? Or
I think it's really interesting that we're also getting at this point, like, Balthazar and Cass are very clearly allies in this. It's very clear that, like, despite everything and all of the sort of, like, not really being on the same team sort of stuff. Like
animosity sort of between them,
like, the haziness in terms of allegiances that, like, I think this episode, you can say, has really clearly cemented Balthazar is working with Cass. Whether that's going to change in the future or not, like, he is currently working with Cass.
Or more explicitly forecast.
Yes.
In this particular instance. I think that Heaven has very clearly sort of been, I mean, even in this episode, they say, like, it's chaos. Everything is just chaos. And Heaven is not exempt from that. Clearly, like, there's civil war kind of going down. Like, again, this is something that's been made explicitly clear. It's just that they don't really show us. We just keep hearing about the fights that are apparently happening off screen. But
this episode, we get confirmation that Balthazar was working on Cass's behalf, essentially.
Yeah.
Which means that if they are working together, then Cass has access to the weapons of Heaven that Balthazar stole.
Yes.
So I think then it becomes more likely that Cass does ultimately win the civil war in Heaven.
Okay.
If he has access to Balthazar's weapons, mm-hmm. it means that the possibility of him winning have increased. So mm-hmm. I think that might be where they're sort of leaning, because, like, also the thing is, I feel like you don't just become leader of Heaven and then everything's great.
No, typically, like, when you have to fight to obtain power.
You have to continue to fight to maintain it.
Yes.
So I think that it's probably not shaping up to be, like, an end point of they are in power in Heaven, they have control over Heaven, so therefore, you know, the fighting's all stopped and it's all good. Like,
yeah.
I feel like power in Heaven is only a temporary position.
I feel like one of the really important things to take away from this particular episode, obviously I know where this plot is going. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, I'm like, oh, like, here is relevant things. I have some other stuff that I want to talk about a little later, mm-hmm. Specifically. But one of the important messages that I don't mind pointing out is that we get emphasis on Cass saying that, like, freedom is the important thing, mm-hmm. and that you do not have to be controlled by fate, that you can make your own future, mm-hmm. essentially. And
which, obviously, fate did not like.
Yeah, she didn't love that. Also, very quickly while we're on Cass, you know I love that boy. But when he says, let's go, not get emotional, I'm sorry, shut the fuck up. A man telling a woman to not get emotional, I don't want to hear it. fuck off with that. Thank you very much.
You're the one who got emotional and completely fucked up her plans in the first place.
The Titanic. What are you fucking talking about? Anyway, yes. So, sorry, Cass. Shut the fuck up. I love you, but I don't want to hear it. But yeah, so we have him arguing with her and saying, you know, freedom is more preferable to, you know, having to follow all these orders. And her coming back with, this isn't freedom so much as it is just chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in the episode, Cass is really impressing on Sam and Dean, like, you taught me that these values, you taught me that freedom is more important and that it is possible to defy fate.
Yes.
And I think important to remember at this point that, like, Cass is literally the angel that doesn't follow orders.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you're making a good point by saying you can fight to obtain power, but it's hard to maintain it, mm-hmm. especially when your purpose, like, he is fighting against the ideal of heaven. His fight is, I don't think we should listen to God's orders or follow the holy plan. I think we should do what we want because that's important.
I think you're actually wrong. I think his platform is that, but it's also, we should not do anything that God wanted us to do except love humans. The one thing that nobody wanted to do of the stuff that God said to do.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it's like, I am only going to support one of God's policies, and that is God's least popular policy.
God can have one right.
Yeah, and that is to love humans. Everything else out the window. But it's like that loving humans thing is the thing that nobody wanted to do.
And so, yeah, he's not only fighting against Raphael, obviously, because Raphael, we know, wants to kickstart the apocalypse. He's also fighting against literally the mentality of his own species. And so it's a fight on multiple fronts.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not just chaos coming from heaven either, because hell's also in chaos at the moment because they've just lost Crowley, king of hell. R.I.P. Crowley. I'm sure you're going to come back because, let's face it, you were good for ratings, so they can't be family. But
characters that start with a C, what is it about them?
I feel like, you know, it's not just chaos from heaven not having a leader. It's not just chaos from hell not having a leader. Like, I'm assuming at this point, at least someone has, or like one or two people have kind of half stepped up to fill the vacuum. But there's a difference between having one king of hell and people vying for a king of hell. I don't think there's a new king of hell fully cemented in that role yet.
Yeah.
So like the demons are in fighting, heaven's in fighting. I think also the monsters are less in fighting now, but they were all desperately scrambling to get Eve, mother of monsters, back.
I think that the thing that you're touching on is really interesting, and I specifically think it is relevant to the phrase, as it is in heaven, so shall it be on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. You're right. It's not just heaven that's in turmoil right now. It is also hell. It is also earth.
Purgatory.
Well, we don't know anything about purgatory.
I'm going to assume that it's also
true. If we're going to follow the same linear logic, then yeah.
Yeah.
So, but we don't actually know anything.
Mm-hmm.
Earth is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Hell is a mess. Heaven is a mess. I think that everything right now is literally just a mess. And that makes sense because the apocalypse was supposed to be the end of everything, kind of as it was. And then it just didn't end anything. And so now, like Fate says in this episode, she says, I don't know what's supposed to happen next. That's my whole job.
I went up to ask and they basically laughed at me. Like,
yeah, literally. And so everyone is kind of in this phase where, like, and we're not talking about just like, you know, average Joe, like me and you, not knowing what happens next. That's just like, we're used to that. We're human beings. We are used to not knowing what happens next. That's part of the joy of life, right? Mm-hmm. But these eternal beings whose sole purpose is to kind of know what's going to happen next, suddenly having no idea.
Mm.
Like, and Balthazar says to Sam and Dean this episode, like, there's no more rules, boys. Like, you threw out the book.
Yeah.
So now we get to do what we want. And Sam and Dean are like, that's not how that fucking works. But for these eternal beings, yeah, it kind of is. Because there is no certainty. There is no consequence.
The only thing keeping them doing what they were meant to be doing was the book.
They've basically just been given a sandbox with no instructions. They are just making whatever the fuck they want because
and now they're fighting over the Scoopy thing.
Yeah, literally. They all want to sit on that cool fucking digger where you can like pull the levers and move around and scoop the sand.
That was my dream as a child in kindergarten.
That's the best shit, right? To be sitting on the big digger. But the people who are sat there just using their hands or a stick or something are like, I want that fucking digger.
Yeah.
And the people on the digger are spending the whole time going, I don't want to get off the fucking digger.
If I show any weakness, they're going to kick me off the digger.
Yeah. exactly, I'm going to get sand in my eyes and that'll be the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, essentially they're all fighting over
the
sand.
Yeah. And the human souls are the sand.
Yeah.
And the more sand you have, the more power you have.
Yeah, and so, like, if you are in that more powerful position of having the digger, the easier it is to collect more sand because you have the digger. It's a whole thing.
It's a very good metaphor.
Thank you.
I want to say, yeah, I also think that it's actually also chaos and purgatory. Mm-hmm. I don't think purgatory gets a pass on this one. I don't think they're that special. But you've also got to remember, we don't know anything that's happening in purgatory except for the fact that Eve, mother of all monsters, has just been dragged out of purgatory. So that's also another power vacuum that's waiting to be filled.
Oh, good point.
So we've now got, I don't know if there's really necessarily one on Earth, but there's definitely like a power vacuum happening in the three supernatural realms in terms of heaven, hell, purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those power vacuums, the fucking consequences of it are happening on Earth. All of these eternal beings are taking their shit out on Earth. Because that's the easiest, most convenient battleground. Because it's the midway point
between everything. And I think we actually had a quote from Dean in like either season 4 or 5 where he tells one of the angels to like take your pissing match somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because it don't take it out on my planet, I think is the quote. Mm. Yeah, no, you make a really good point. Did you have any other thoughts or feelings about the plot or where it might be going or just generally? Just while we're on it. I'm not fishing. I'm just asking before we move on.
I want to go fishing though. Like this season's really, like I've been talking to you about this. This season's been really hard to me because I feel like normally with the way the first 5 seasons of Kripke were done, you've got 2 dozen fishing lines and you could kind of go fishing on any of them and maybe catch a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whereas there's a lot of fishing lines in Gamble era, but none of them have actual fishing line on them. If that makes sense. Like, some of them are missing bait. Some of them don't have any line. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
going with a fishing analogy, I feel like it's more like fishing with a net. And in Kripke, you could fish with a net and it didn't matter where you dragged it, you were pretty likely to catch a fish. With Gamble, it's like you've overfished. The population is depleted. there's no more fish. Mm. So you can drag that net as much as you want. The chances of you catching anything is lower.
It's kind of like you had a sonograph machine where you could see the fish. And so you were purposely trawling in areas where you could see the fish.
We're really into our analogies today.
Yeah, look, either you get it or you don't. If you don't get it, I'm sorry. But, you know, you could see the fish. You had the equipment to see the fish.
Yeah.
And now Sarah Gamble's purposely thrown it out.
Yeah.
Like, they're not doing the same sort of stuff that Kripke era did.
No.
In terms of giving you the indication of where the plot line's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't doubt that there are fish there. I don't doubt that it's happening. I don't doubt that there are ways that you could see what fish are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you know what signs to look for, you're not going to see the fish.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I want to go fishing because I really enjoy it. I really enjoy being correct all the time. It's just a trait that I have. It's not my fault.
You're like, I love being validated.
I love being validated. In a public format. I love guessing these things. I love being like, yeah, I think Sam's soulless this season. And then just being right. That is the good shit. But yeah, I feel like I'm not getting a lot. But I also do want to say some things.
Okay.
Just in case they do come to pass.
So this is your throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks moment?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing a Sarah Gamble. Sarah Gamble season 6, Jamie edition.
Throw shit at the wall. See what sticks.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the Campbell storyline is fully over. I don't think we're going to see any of them again.
That's one of the things that she threw at the wall with high hopes and it just fucking fell
off. It fell off. It's not stuck. It's okay. I do think, though, that it is going to be relevant moving forward.
Okay.
Like, I think that she spent too much time on the Campbells for the fact that they have hunting family suddenly be obsolete and irrelevant. Like, I do think that something to do with their family being hunters will come back up again.
Sam and Dean's bloodline is already so plot significant that, like, I'll tell you right now, their family history remains significant.
Yeah.
Not with the same characters. We don't see Gwen, like, raised from the dead or anything that I remember anyway.
But
like, the family lines of the Winchesters and the Campbells remain significant. Important. Yeah.
And they told us that in season 5 and... Well, seasons 1 through 5.
Yeah.
And seasons 1 through 5 was kind of focused on the importance of the Winchester bloodline. So I think it wouldn't be surprising to me to see the importance of the Campbell bloodline come in now. And just the fact that they do have that history of
hunting
in their family, whether they deal with that by the end of the season or not, considering there's 4 episodes left.
We're not even halfway through the series. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly an open-ended opportunity. If they wanted to follow down that path, they've got room to expand.
Okay, moving on to the next plot thread, the War in Hell. I do think that we will get another iconic character introduced to fill the King of Hell position. I think we'll also get Crowley back, but I think by the time he comes back, it'll be too late and somebody else has already filled that position. And I think he's going to hate whoever the fuck fills his position.
Valid,
I think there's going to be a lot of animosity there. I think it's going to be very fun.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that here's a wild theory.
Okay.
Okay.
I love when you say that. With trepidation.
Cass is going to win the Battle for Heaven. And I think the way he's going to do it is by working with Hell and Purgatory to overthrow Raphael.
Interesting.
I think he's going to have allies that aren't necessarily like who you would think of. Like, I think
not Sam and Dean, basically.
Not Sam and Dean.
The only two people.
Not Sam and Dean. Not Balthazar. Not any of the other angels who he's been shown to interact with.
Okay.
I think that we're definitely going to see him working with people who are trustworthy. Like, I think Cass is going to have to sacrifice something to win. But okay. I do think Cass is actually going to win.
All right.
Because I think that's a really great way for Sarah Gamble to keep Misha Collins off the set.
Okay.
If he's too busy running Kevin and keeping on to power, I think it's really easy to keep him out of the show. So I think that's what Sarah Gamble
wants. So it comes down to the Gamble long con of her just not liking Misha or Cass very much.
Exactly.
Okay, great. I love that that's what your theories are rooted in.
Now you're getting it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we've got the Mother of Monsters Eve storyline. Yeah. I think she's going to be a recurring problem, one of the big bads of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to come back. Hell, she might even be like an unlikely ally that Cass finds.
Yeah.
I think that it means that they're going to continuously get more and more monsters that shouldn't be in specific places. And I think it also means that they're going to get more and more difficult to kill monsters. And so I don't know if it'll be her as the big bad at the end of the season or if it'll be one of the monsters that she creates. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was either of those options.
Or like a combination of the two.
Or a combination of the two.
She is clearly experimenting. It's kind of like Demon Science all over again, but like mother of all science, I guess.
Yeah.
So she's playing in the petri dishes. She's cooking stuff up. Actually, like Pestilence as a horseman, like he, you know, cooked up the disease. Yeah. You know, very similar sort of approach, I suppose.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be like an enemy of my enemy sort of situation.
Okay.
I think they all hate Raphael enough. Like, here's the other thing. Raphael wants the apocalypse back on, right? And so theoretically, we're working up to potentially an apocalypse. I think the demons maybe don't want the apocalypse as much anymore. Now that Lucifer's gone and there's no real hope of bringing him back, I think that the current world order gives them too much power to want to give that up. So I think that self-preservation will mean that...
will out.
And I think it's all going to come down to souls and the sheer power of them.
I am really interested to see how your theories continue to flesh out as we go into the next couple episodes. I think it's going to be really interesting and people listening at home will know why I think that. And yeah, as for souls, like, you're right. Like, they are significant, I said before, but like, even as sort of recently as in season 5, having famine eating the souls and stuff, like, they're significant. Mm-hmm. And especially to these sort of eternal beings. Obviously, like, we've had Soulless Sam this season as well. Like, you can see what the absence of a soul does to a person. And so then you can understand the way that an eternal being versus a human understands the value of a soul. For Sam and Dean, they're going to value a soul as, like, your personhood and the thing that gives you a, like, moral sense versus these eternal beings who are like, I see a soul as a food source, a power source, a currency, even, you know.
I think that the souls might work in terms of a power source in a similar way that, like, you know, in Peter Pan, Tinkerbell and Belief?
Yeah.
Like, if you have the souls that believe in you, you're more powerful. So,
Well, that's interesting as a concept in and of itself.
If that makes sense. Like,
almost like a tulpa from, like, season 1.
So the more souls believe in you, the more powerful you are.
Hmm.
And how do you get people and souls to believe in you when you're like a demon or something like that is by essentially buying their soul. You know what I mean? Like, you can buy that belief.
It's kind of like the false inflation of GameStop. It's kind of like that. Like, in this episode, like, Fate says, like, you can't just mint money, because that's essentially what they were trying to do, right? It's the equivalent. And yeah, you can't just do that to the system. Yeah. Like, you can, but you shouldn't, and there's a reason. Yeah. Like,
there are consequences for doing it.
Exactly.
They created 50,000 souls who they can then
use,
push towards their belief.
Their cause.
Because they are whether the people know it or not, the souls are indebted almost to Cass and Balthazar, if that makes sense.
That, look, there's more I could say on that, but I'm not going to because I don't want to give you too much of information one way or another.
Yeah.
But certainly you're on the right track when you're thinking about the importance of souls. And it's important to all the major players.
Mm-hmm.
And it is relevant to power and it's relevant to keeping that power as well. Yeah. So yeah, no, you're certainly on the right track with that. I'll tell you that much for free. Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on outside of that?
I'm happy for you to move on to your next
one.
Was there another plot point in this episode that I should theorize on?
No, I think you covered everything that you should be aware of. I want to cover one other thing that you can't really listen to. Can I maybe...
Are you kicking me out of my own house again?
Just a little bit. Just for a minute. It'll only take a couple of seconds. I just want... The thing is, there's just a really specific example that I want to make sure that I do justice to. Because I can't be like, you know, in this scene...
Fucking hell.
I'm sorry. You can come back in a minute. It's just while we're on the topic of theorizing about plot stuff.
Getting kicked this is out of the my relevant own section.
The long-suffering sigh of Jamie.
Okay, hello. Now that we're... I wanted to talk about the 612 phenomenon again because it comes up a couple of times this episode and there's only one spot where I really want to bat Jamie because it's too much of an explicit example. First of all, when Cass pulls Sam and Dean away from the fire that fate has left, the explosion that she sort of set up for them, the discussion that they're having, those three characters, the camera keeps pulling away to look at them like long distance wide angle again, which is an example of the 612 phenomenon. And at first I was like, that doesn't really count because Cass is obviously in the scene talking to them. Then I realized it would be Crowley's POV because obviously working together to have Crowley kind of keeping tab on Cass's discussions with the Winchesters because as we get in 620, obviously we have Crowley accusing Cass like not having his head in the game and Cass is spending too much time about the Winchesters and their safety, what they think of rather than focusing the souls and the war and things like that. So I think actually that would be Crowley watching the three of them versus Cass watching the others, which is what it's been thus far. So I thought that was really interesting. Also, when Bobby and Ellen are sitting at the table just after Bobby had told Ellen that she and Joe would die if they resync the ship, we again have like pulled out shot. It actually like moves slowly away and it pulls from looking at them in the table in the kitchen and the camera moves back into the library. So it shows like keeping that distance and stuff. And it's also like a lower angle as someone's kind of creeping. And that becomes really important because later in the episode, Cass uses the phrase about dying being different to never being born. And so I think this is actually a really, really good example. Like Cass is lurking, Cass is watching because he's clearly either present watching Sam, Dean and Bobby talk about this and use that, or he was watching Ellen and Bobby where we have, you know, the camera wide shot, the camera moving away shot. Either way, I think it is really, really interesting that he used the exact same turn of phrase because like it could be a coincidence, but given the rest of, you know, the plot of this season, I'm going to suggest that it's intentional. So yeah, that's that particular line being utilized. I just really wanted to hide out Jamie being around. I didn't want to give her the clue, but I think, I don't know, for me it's significant. Anyway, I'll grab Jamie.
Jamie, well, I don't know. What else did you want me to do? You can't hear this. It's important. I promise you'll get to talk to me about it soon. I promise it'll be really soon.
I don't like this.
I know you don't. I've never had to do this before, but this theory is just, I just have to, I want to talk about it in the episodes where it's relevant. So.
And unfortunately, it's a new theory of your own creation.
Yeah.
So you can't just be like, this theory.
I can't vaguely reference. It's not like I could be like, oh yeah, you know, the beer theories, you know.
Yeah.
Go Google it in your own time. No.
Which, speaking of the beer theories.
Yes.
Is this beer from this week relevant at all?
I literally did not notice if it was. So if it is, I apologize. But I don't explicitly remember anyone ever using this beer as an example of beer theory like meta stuff. So I'm going to say no. But if I'm wrong and someone knows better than me, please let me know because I would be really interested.
Okie dokies. Well, then if you don't know, what's the point of you being the resident expert?
So that I can come up with fun new theories that you'll have no business knowing anything about. Okay, I do have a guess for your PSA, though.
Ooh, go on.
Okay, I think that if you spill water on electronics, you should just not touch it, especially if it's sparking. Like, hot take, I know, but that's my guess.
That was not my PSA of the day.
Really?
No.
What's your PSA
of the day? I had a PSA of the day, and I'm trying to find it in my notes, but I just know that was not it. Oh, I remember my PSA of the day was, a full 8 hours sleep is important.
It is.
Yeah. Apparently Bobby's not sleeping, and I find this so fucking funny, specifically, because Sam not sleeping is how they knew he didn't have a soul.
Oh, yeah. It's basically synonymous with not doing so great.
Yeah. I found it so funny that they were like, oh, Bobby's not sleeping. It's like, yeah, that was one of the things that tipped you off, that Sam just straight up did not have a soul.
Oh, actually.
It's weird to me that you're not more suspicious about that.
I had a point about this, actually. Yeah. I wanted to know if, do we think in this timeline, they actually ever dealt with soulless Sam? Because stuff changed. Like, the way the apocalypse and stuff went down, obviously it changed because Ellen and Joe were dead. Well, weren't dead, rather.
Maybe if Ellen and Joe had survived that episode, they would have meant that Sam never got sent to hell.
Yeah, maybe. So who knows? Maybe Sam has never been soulless in this particular timeline.
Maybe.
Also, I do fucking love the line from Balthazar, who, first of all, is a fucking icon this episode just generally. I do love him.
Yeah.
He has this line where he's talking about, like, you know, you don't drive an Impala. And he's like, yes, I know, what's an Impala? Not important. And I think that is so fucking funny, given that the Impala's existence was, like, literally half of the way that they defeated the apocalypse. Like,
literally, the Impala is, like, one of the most crucial things. I think the more important thing is, it's less about the actual car itself and more about, like, the family ties behind it.
Yes.
Still very funny that the Impala, with the very significant etching and half the reason that Sam managed to get blown into hell by a strong breeze, and also the way they defeated the apocalypse in the main timeline is apparently not a thing.
Not at all, and just not important.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to point out about that, though, is that they, in this episode, are driving a Ford Mustang. And some fun little behind-the-scenes trivia.
The timeline that Kripke wanted.
Yeah, literally. So Kripke originally wanted them to drive a Mustang. So I think that the choice in car is actually potentially like a meta reference to the, like, the different timeline that is our world timeline, you know? Yeah. So I think that's really fun as, like, just an inclusion.
As just, like, a little, like, nod.
Yeah. Or even, like, maybe not our world, because, like, we know in The French Mistake they still drive an Impala. So, like, you know, it's just fascinating to me that they chose a Mustang. And I wonder if there was, like, that actual intention behind it, or if they just chose, like, any old muscle car and just happened to be the one that...
I would say it's probably, like, a nod.
I hope it is.
It doesn't... It's the sort of thing that feels like...
Maybe they actually put a bit of thought into it.
Because the other thing is, I don't think it even would have to be that much thought.
No.
I think it would be
the,
like...
the bare minimum.
Yeah. I think it'd be like, oh, in an alternate timeline, what sort of car would Sam and Dean drive?
Mm.
Oh, a Mustang. That's what they were originally slated to drive until it got changed to an Impala. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, very fun. Did you have any other places you would like to go?
Oh, I forgot. I had one more thing that I wanted to theorize on.
Oh, fun.
It seems weird to me, this episode, that they'd bring the Fates into it to only show us one of the three Fates, to have the one of the three Fates reference her other sisters.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't get any more Fates at all in this season. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get a cameo or an appearance or
reference to
or something about the other two Fates. Just the way that she said, you know, my sisters are bigger than me in every way makes it seem like, okay, well, there's going to be something that happens with the Fates. And so, you know, you've got the three Fates. And I did actually Google the Greek mythology behind this.
Oh, fun. You came to the podcast with research.
I did.
That so rarely happens.
I know. I was also a Greek mythology nerd. So I just wanted to confirm that what I knew was true.
We're sitting next to your entire Percy Jackson collection, so.
Don't out me like that, bitch. So you've got Atropos, who we met this week. She's the one who cuts the string.
Yeah.
You've also got the spinner and the weaver, essentially. So you've got someone who spins all the thread, then they measure it to length. That's the second Fate. And then she's the one who cuts it to length. The other two are more involved in, like, the design portion rather than the...
And she's execution.
Yes.
Like, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of like judge, jury, and executioner. So it's very interesting to see that we've got the executioner, but we haven't met the judge and jury yet. Also, I did also remember, so the Fates are tied to different, like, so... Atropos, who we met this week, is tied to the past.
Oh,
and then you got also future. I can't remember which way they are, but one's attached to the future and one's attached to the present. So I wouldn't be surprised if also, like, the future or the present was a theme if we do get the other Fates moving forward.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that. And actually, she makes a big point to Cass, and she says, like, you can change the future, but you cannot change the past. And we've even had this before in The Song Remains the Same. Like, mm-hmm. the whole point of that episode was Cass bringing Dean back at the end and saying, it didn't matter what you did, it was always going to end that way.
Yeah.
So he knows this.
Yeah. He's essentially already just demonstrated Tropos' skills for him. Like,
well, that, but I also wonder if that's because it was the fate of the apocalypse. Like,
yeah.
whether or not the Titanic itself was specifically slated to sink for mm-hmm. XYZ purposes, and then, like, it wasn't just like, oh, it happened to happen, but now it's happened, so it has yeah. to stay that way kind of thing.
Well, the Titanic sank specifically so Celine Dion could become famous.
Yeah, obviously.
Which I was 100% fucking correct about. It is wild to me that the joke I made about how it's going to be about Celine Dion.
Balthazar hating Celine Dion is so funny. Is so funny to me. And actually, I love Balthazar so much. The fact that he fucking named himself IP freely. Like, all right, bro. Jesus, how old are you again? Oh, a couple millennia. But no, I love him. We get some iconic lines from him this episode, including, I saved people. I thought you loved that kind of thing. Which, yeah, valid, actually. That's a pretty solid argument from Balthazar.
And should have been the first warning sign that he was working with Cass.
Yeah. Yeah, actually,
valid. Because Cass is the only person who cares about what the Winchesters think.
Yeah. But also, we get the quote, which is obviously very, very relevant to my brain worms. Sorry, you have me confused with the other angel, you know, the one in the dirty trench coat that's in love with you, followed by a direct cut to Dean.
I'm sure the intention of that scene was to imply that he loved them like brothers.
Absolutely. Definitely not specifically one of them, specifically more than the other. And definitely when I talk about how I care about my sibling, I definitely say, yeah, the sibling I'm in love with and not yeah. the sibling that I love.
Someone oopsie doopsie the writing there.
I don't know if we should say that Eric Chamello and Nicole Snyder oopsie doopsie. I feel like maybe they, and even Phil Screezier, the director of this episode, knew what they were doing. And I don't know who the editor was, but I would love to say that they also knew what the fuck they were doing.
We should thank them for their service. They're braver than any US Marine.
They had to obey the CW sniper. So they were really putting their lives on the line. I don't know if you know this, but there's like fandom lore about the CW sniper and also the Supernatural intern. And basically, like, the intern was hired to tell them if anything was considered too gay. And the sniper was in charge of taking anyone out who defied instruction. And so there would be jokes whenever we got a new episode. The CW Supernatural gay intern is really on our side. Like, you know, they were like, yeah, no, that's not gay at all. Like, definitely not queer. No, no, no. And then the sniper is like,
well, there's a very straight interpretation of that.
Yeah, definitely. That is the most heterosexual thing I've ever fucking seen.
Mm-hmm. What's so funny to me, though, is the scene at the end where he's like, Titanic wasn't that bad. You know, Kate Winslet's wrecked. The way he says it, though, says that he does not believe it.
Yeah.
he's just been caught saying something kind of queer.
Yeah, no, he's saying, I enjoy this film that is primarily
marketed to women.
Marketed to women. It's a quote-unquote chick flick love story romance, and I just said I like it, so I need to come up with a manly, quote-unquote, reason to make that acceptable in front of Sam. And what is so funny to me is that as soon as he says that, Cass nopes the fuck out without saying goodbye at all. And then Dean goes, ah, he just doesn't understand the finer things. And it's like, yeah, he's not interested in boobs. But like, also, I think it's interesting because Cass, we've talked about before, is one of the only characters that actually sees directly through Dean's shit mm-hmm. and understands that this is posturing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he basically, like, the way that I feel about that scene is kind of like, Cass just noping out of there is like the equivalent of like the biggest fucking eye roll, side eye.
It's a sure jam.
He's like, okay. And he's like, I've had enough of your shit and I'm gonna nope out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that's very fun. And again, like, they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's really interesting that Cass is like kind of straight up lying to the brothers, like at this point. Like, he's just like, oh yeah, no, Balthazar totally acted on his own accord. Like, I had nothing to do with it. And so it would be interesting for me to see if Cass just keeps on making more and more morally grey or like quote-unquote dark decisions or like morally bad decisions in this quest for power. Because, you know, he says freedom's preferable and it's like, but to what?
Yeah.
Like, at where do you draw the line at what is acceptable for maintaining freedom?
Yeah, and like this is kind of what I was touching on before with like angels and like they're not supposed to really have freedom. Mm-hmm. Like they're not designed to have it. And so like when Sam and Dean are saying to Balthazar, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that people inherently know because mm-hmm. we have freedom our whole lives. I mean, to an extent, obviously, it depends on situation, but we have the ability to make choices and then face consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Where eternal beings who have always just been told what to do, if you do always just follow those orders, you don't really face consequences. Mm-hmm. Cass is very new to facing consequences, yeah. Right? Obviously, like,
well, he surprised Pikachu face consequences for my actions.
Exactly. But the thing is, like, the consequences of his actions thus far have been, like, he averted the apocalypse.
Mm.
Widely viewed as a good thing.
Critics agree.
Yeah, critics agree that that was an okay choice, you know. And particularly, like, Sam and Dean, obviously, are his, like, theoretically, like, his closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to be like, yes, this was a good use of your personal freedoms. Like, it's
he's getting rewarded for his behavior at this point. It'll yeah. be interesting to see if he reaches a point whether he can no longer reward him for his behavior because his behavior is not good.
Well, it's also interesting to think of the way that, like, the perspective that we are given as the audience is mm-hmm. primarily Sam and Dean's perspective. And, like, that was really abundantly clear at the start of the season where we were like, oh, this is Dean's perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that the audience's moral compass mm-hmm. is filtered through Sam and Dean's understanding of the moral compass. So, like, regardless of if Cass or Bobby or Crowley or whoever are making decisions, they will be filtered through the boys' moral compass to the audience. And this isn't just relevant to now, but like through the whole series, actually, it is really interesting to look at the way that certain actions and certain characters are portrayed by the show in mm-hmm. terms of whether or not what they're doing is morally just.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down to like, well, honestly, if I was looking at this from someone else's perspective that wasn't Sam or Dean mm-hmm. and like the assumption that they are correct in mm-hmm. their morals, I might have a different opinion, actually.
Okay, new theory on the Sarah Gamble long con.
Oh,
are you ready?
Never, but I'm excited nonetheless.
She makes Cass evil at the okay. end of the season so that viewers don't want to see him anymore so that they, he no longer boosts the ratings so she can write him off.
I'm so sorry. Literally, you and Noah, actually, just being like, plot twist. One of the fan favorite characters has actually been evil this entire time. It's so funny. It's like a trend.
No, but you know,
I can't wait to see who's evil next season.
If she just keeps on, if she makes him evil, if she makes him do morally dicey things in order to try and sway the fandom from loving Cass
mm.
so that she no longer has to depend on Misha Collins for ratings, Sarah Gamble long con.
The way the Sarah Gamble long con has devolved. Like, do you remember when the Sarah Gamble long con was just, she probably just likes heaven imagery. And now it's insane politics and she's plotting to murder Misha Collins.
She's only planning character assassination of Cass. It's fine.
Sorry, I can't breathe.
It's not it's not actual assassination. It's just character assassination. No,
she
get with the time.
She got through her fantasy of murdering Misha Collins through yeah. the French mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Eric Kripke while we're at it.
Yeah.
That is, oh, so funny. I think, sorry, evil Bobby and then evil Cass. I'm just like, who's going to be evil season 7, like, a fan favorite character? But
I was about to say,
we had evil Sam.
We had evil Sam. I'm sticking with my theory. We get an evil Cass so that it will tank the rating so she doesn't have to hire Misha Collins for season 7.
She's like, I know why the CW is broke. We have too many actors. We got to cull some back. Can't get rid of Jensen or Jared. Unfortunately, we're stuck with them. I know who's a great candidate. Sorry, anyway. Yeah, so next season, what? Evil Dean?
Evil Dean, yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think we're going to get Evil Bobby yet. I feel like Evil Bobby's going to be like a season 11 thing.
Okay.
Bobby doesn't feel to me as a character that's going to become evil easily. So I feel like we need a bit of build up. We need like another couple of seasons of Bobby to like make him evil. You know what
okay.
I mean?
Okay. I am living for your thoughts on the ease of which it would be to like make certain lovable characters evil.
Yeah. That's well, Dean's really already half a demon. He spent like 40 years in hell.
Yeah, good point. Oh, fuck. Okay. So while we're on Cass, there was another quote that I wanted to touch on, which is the quote where Fate says, it's not like you're fighting a war or anything, right? You can watch them for every millisecond of every day. And I was like, number one, I love to see her be petty.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Also, bold of her to assume he doesn't already watch Dean every millisecond of every day.
Cass has like 1,000 eyes in his true form.
Yeah.
You think that not at least one of them is constantly trained on Dean Winchester. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like she makes a point. Like he's fucking busy, you know? Yeah. And so I do think it's interesting that like,
even if he watches Dean every second of every day, he can't necessarily drop everything to save Dean every second of every day.
Well, literally in this episode, he like genuinely, literally pulls their asses out of the fire at the last second. He does it on multiple occasions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's trying. And I think that one of the important things to take away from this episode is like, regardless of the souls, regardless of everything that Cass is trying to do and the importance of the fight that he's currently fighting, and they've been harping on about this all season. Like, this is not new information, right? That Cass is determined to fight for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe one of the, like, most important things to, like, take away about Cass's priorities is that he gave up the 50,000 souls. And, you know, like, we have the quote from him where,
he gave up the 50,000 souls for two.
Yeah. There's the quote that I think Sam says to him, like, oh, you killed 50,000 people for us? And Cass is like, no, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And you said that they brought it up a lot this episode. Like, it's different to have never been born than to be killed. And this is something that's come up in the show before as well.
And what I will say is I find it really funny is they're like, no, I didn't kill those people. But also he did kind of kill the people. Like, the people on the original Titanic still very much died.
Yeah. And you created the new people and then decided to uncreate them. So, like, you are making the decision as to which souls survive, right? I do think it's interesting that despite everything, despite the lengths that they went to get those souls, like, he still does give them up for the sake of Sam and Dean. And he says to them, it was the only way to keep you safe. So, like, regardless of what he is doing with heaven and stuff and, like, but ultimately, like, his primary concern are his friends.
But also to pull something like this tells me that Cass is desperate.
I think fate says as much this episode.
Like, there is no way that you're going back in time to change something, to get souls, that's going to piss off the fates. Because you can't tell me that they didn't know this was going to piss off the fates before they did it. They may be dumb, but they're not stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
it's interesting. It makes me wonder, like, if they had gotten away with it, what else they might have gone back in history to try and undo to get more souls. I'm like, are they going to un-assassinate Franz Ferdinand? What other historical things are they going to shift? Are they going to evacuate Pompeii? Like,
see, that's going back real far. So the butterfly effect of going back that far would be huge.
Yeah, because the further back you go,
the more you get,
the more generations, essentially, of families you get. I think that everyone, and you're right, like, heaven and hell and purgatory and earth, like, everyone's got their sort of
own shit happening.
Yeah, everyone's got their own shit happening, and everyone has their own motivation, you know. And so it's interesting to sort of see how they clash and overlap. Anywho, I have a question for you.
Oh, that's never a good sign.
It's not, like, a serious question.
Yeah.
I want to make a note, because I noticed this in the episode and I laughed. You know how we have our whole, like, joke about Sam is very stabbable because it's literally the only canonical way he can ever die, right? Yeah. That we've seen so far. I was thinking about how when they are literally trying to tempt fate, which, by the way, the fucking montage of them just doing dangerous shit.
The music choice, iconic.
With one way or another over the fucking top is hilarious. So fucking funny. I love it. And I think that, like, the production of that scene and, like, the acting and, like, the concept is just stellar. I thought it was really fun. I did have a question, which was, why would they walk through the people tossing the, like, axes and tossing the flames? But then I thought about it and I was like, oh no, they can't walk through the axes because Sam is stabbable. Mm. They can't walk through. But then they walk through the fire, right? And I was like, wait a minute, Sam is stabbable, but he may also be fireproof. Because just quickly think about Sam's life, starting in the nursery with the fire, that he fully escapes with no real consequences other than the demon blood, but that's irrelevant to the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he escapes the fire where Jess dies with, like, nigh a burn on him. And then in Bad Day at Black Rock, even when the room is on fire and he is in the worst possible position and he should be burned to death, he manages to put out the fire. And yes, sure, he immediately gets tied to a chair by two guys that are trying to kill him, but he doesn't burn to death. And I think that that is significant. So I was like, you know what, Sam may be stabbable, but he is also flame retardant.
Turns out demon blood is the best possible flame retardant you can have. That's really the key thing here. Like,
I just think it's really funny. I was like, the number of occasions that Sam has had the opportunity to be on fire and he simply hasn't.
I mean, being on fire is so passe. Like,
to be fair, Dean has also been in a majority of those scenarios and was also not on fire. But I just think that it's just interesting to see what can and can't affect Sam.
Yeah. You know what, though? The moment where they're about to die because the thing's falling on them did give me Mystery Spot vibes, though, when he gets killed by the fallen piano.
Yes, yes. And also the, like, cold open death and, like, the death of the second death of the lady in this episode really give me Bad Day at Black Rock energy, which I think is really, really fun. Oh, and then the fucking guy who gets hit by the bus. Yeah. And there's the personal injury and accidental death ad, and it's literally for his company. And then Dean being like, haha, and Sam's like, yeah, Dean, I'm pretty sure 6 seconds is too soon. Hilarious. It was giving Bad Day at Black Rock. It was giving Mystery Spot. I love to see it.
It was giving it. We love it. I do really want to quickly say, though, the line, you weren't just a poker buddy. So gay.
Yeah, I know.
So so inherently queer to me.
Yes. I literally have a note that says, he wasn't just a poker buddy. Bobby Rufus Truthers, rise up. Like
side eye emoji. Like, what the...
Yeah.
You're trying to tell me these two men were straight together? Like...
It's such an interesting way to phrase it. Like, essentially, like, what they're saying is, Rufus wasn't nobody to you.
Yeah. Which is like, fine. There are
so many ways you could say that.
It's giving, are you guys antiquers? Like,
literally.
It was just wild to me that we're meant to interpret that as your best friends or, like, he was your mentor or whatever. Like,
especially because then they, like, go on to have Bobby say that I knew he was dead from the moment I, like, met him or the moment he said hello. Because, like, that's also the way that Jess describes her death being inevitable from the second she said hello to Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she literally says, I was dead the moment I said hello. Like, that's the line when, like, Lucifer is presenting to Sam as Jess. And so I'm like, guys, this is
a little free. This is a little queer. Like, the gay intern was really asleep at the wheel that day.
And the sniper was confused. I was like, these aren't the guys I'm normally meant to worry about. But yeah, no, so I also wanted to ask you your thoughts on Bobby and Ellen.
I have one note about them, and that note is, this is why there is so much Bobby, Ellen are married fic. Like, you can feel it in your bones. Like, you're like, I don't think I personally ship it. I don't not ship it, to be clear. Mm. But, like, yeah.
It's like 2 + 2 = 4. Like, it does make sense. I think it's the kind of thing where if they had interacted more on screen,
it'd be a little less like...
Prior to Ellen and Joe's canon death, I would probably have been like, oh, yeah, like, I see that. I actually kind of love it, honestly, in this episode. I think that the way that they play it in this episode particularly, I think that it makes sense. I feel like it makes sense for the characters. I feel like it makes sense, like, from a plot kind of perspective. Because if you think about the way that Ellen and Bobby's lives have been impacted by hunting, like, they both lost significant others and, you know, they were both really heavily involved in sort of the hunter community.
They both hate John.
And they both hate John. They both love the boys, you know.
Like, match made in heaven.
Yeah, you know, and I think that they have, and we see it this episode, like, they have, like, the ability to sort of give each other as good as they get and call each other out on their shit. Genuinely, if this had been a pairing that they had gone with in, like, the traditional timeline, I think it actually would have made a lot of sense and I would have really enjoyed it. I think that maybe they wouldn't have, purely because they were angling, like, a Dean and Joe kind of thing, and then they would have been, like, step-siblings, and I feel like maybe they wanted to avoid that, but...
I figured at this point Destiel was already so much that they were like, Dean and Joe is not gonna happen, so...
Stop trying to make it happen. It's not gonna happen. Yes, no, so I quite like it. Also, the line, accidents don't just happen accidentally.
Are you sure about that one, bro?
It's iconic. And that gif gets used a lot, particularly in reference to Supernatural
being a bit gay.
Well, that but also, like, accidental foreshadowing and, like, kind of like faith sort of thing, you know.
But we know that's not an accident. It's the Sarah Gamble long con.
Exactly, because accidents don't just happen accidentally, as per her era.
We've got the receipts.
Speaking of which, we also get a quote from Bobby this episode where he says, if anybody can pull this out of their asses, it's those two. And I was like, that could literally be the tagline of Supernatural, honestly. Like, that's just the show. I did want to quickly talk about Bobby and Ellen as well.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, Ellen comes out and she's like, you know, the easiest way to fix it would be to just sink the ship. And Bobby's like, no, obviously, because Dean's just told him what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, they're kind of backing and forthing about it. And underneath that conversation, I'm not 100% sure, but it's very close. It sounds like an off-brand version of Dean's theme. Like, it sounds like a very similar piece. Like, there were a couple of notes in there where I was like, oh, that really, really rings of Dean's theme in there. And I thought that was really interesting because it was, like, the parental figures and discussing kind of, like, the inevitability of death and, you know, talking mm-hmm. about things that are meant to be. And then Bobby says, nothing's meant to be. Whether or not we're together isn't at the whim of some dick angel. And I thought that was particularly interesting given, like, the way that John and Mary got together and the way that mm-hmm. their fates were kind of tied. And it was very much orchestrated by heaven and by the angels and by fate.
And even just the way that this episode, Bobby and Ellen only actually happened because of some dick angel meddling with...
Exactly. And so, like, you know, I think it's really interesting. And that kind of concept will continue to be interesting, particularly into, like, the last season of Supernatural. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what is and what is not controlled by others. Yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting sort of parallel between, like, Sam and Dean's parents and then their strongest parental figures, you know, and, like, how much of it is tied together by fate and circumstance versus, like, actual free will.
Yeah.
One last thing on Ellen and Joe, other than that I love them. Also, very quickly, I do appreciate that we got to see Bobby grieving Rufus in this episode. As much as I'm still mad that they killed him in the first place, I am glad that it wasn't something that we just ignored after the end of last week's episode. I'm glad that it was a continuing theme. Like, Bobby was still grieving and upset, and it's obviously impacting him more than...
Well, they weren't just poker buddies.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Just so gay.
Yeah. But the last thing on Ellen and Joe is at the end of the episode when they find Bobby asleep on the couch and Dean kind of, like, puts the blanket over him and turns out the light. Over the picture frame, which did have a picture of Bobby and Ellen together earlier in the episode,
Bobby.
It's now just Bobby, which is like, okay, sure, we get
it. It feels really weird to me that Bobby would just have a picture of himself in his own house. Like, Bobby does not strike me as the type of man who, like, frames a picture of himself.
Yeah, not so much. For me, it was really giving, and people at home may know, it was giving me the toast in, in 1520. So that's what it was giving for me. But what I thought was interesting...
Sometimes I think I know about the finale and then you say things.
You have so much to look forward to, Jamie. And by look forward to, I mean look forward to roasting. But with the picture frame, what I thought was interesting was that Dean tucks Bobby in and then we sort of pan to the image and we see him standing alone. And then Dean turns off the two lights above the picture frame. And for me, I felt like that was maybe symbolic of Joe and Ellen's lights going out because it's not just one lamp or anything. It's both. And they're very pointedly switched off. Mm-hmm. Intentionally or not, that's what like it made me think of. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to mention it here in case anyone else thought that too. Or if they hadn't, and they now will think of it differently. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so, actually. Though I will say, like, we got the, like, opening recap thing. And I was like, why are they reminding me of Joe and Ellen? This cannot be good. This is never a good sign.
It's literally a case of, like, let's bring them back just to kill them.
Yeah.
Just to kill them for man pain.
It's a lot of fun. It's great.
Killing women for man pain's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Jamie. Absolutely love it as a trope. It can never go wrong. There's no inherent misogyny in it at all.
Very quickly, I do want to just touch on, there was a poster in the travel agent's office that said, Detroit voted America's top city. And I just thought that was funny, given
I have a feeling Detroit. That Dean did not vote in that. Like, just a sneaky suspicion does not feel like a poll that maybe Dean voted in.
Speaking of Dean, I wanted to touch on the fact that him being bad with people is making a strong comeback while interviewing Mr. Russo.
What's so wild to me about that was, like, there are so many less awkward or weird ways to ask those questions.
I know.
Like, he did not need to ask them like that. Like,
maybe this is a timeline where he's just worse at his job. Like, honestly. That part where he's like, no, I'm not threatening you, but if you don't watch your back, then you're gonna die. Like, what the fuck?
All he needed to say there was, look, someone is taking out your relatives. You might be a target next.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Here's my card.
Here's my card. If anything weird happens, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, he just fully threatens the dude in, like, a non-threatening way. It's a wild time.
It's an interesting take. And then, like, when he leaves, he's like, all right, man. And he's like, it's your funeral kind of thing. And I'm like, bro, you could have handled that so much better.
So the whole point was you weren't trying to threaten the dude. Like, you could at least pretend to not threaten the dude.
I also really love the quote from Cass where, like, Sam and Dean are kind of like, well, what did we ever do to fate? And he's like, oh, nothing of import. Only the small thing of averting the apocalypse and of rendering her obsolete. I do love that line. I mean, I love Cass, you know that I do.
Yeah.
So I also loved when they woke up again and they showed that it was the original timeline again by having Celine Dion playing as they woke up. I did think that was really, really funny.
Mistress, but I knew where Celine Dion went.
They have so many, like, triggers that are related to songs.
How much money did they waste on licensing music for this goddamn TV show? Is that why the CW show?
Specifically this episode. Mm. Yeah. If the rest of the season has completely shocking special effects, this is why. Actually, this is what they spent Misha Collins' salary on.
Okay.
Like, that's why he's missing from so much of this season, is they really saved up for these songs. Last but not least, my final note was, I love the line from Dean where he looks at Sam and he's like, why are you having my dreams, dude? Like,
as if he's purposefully having his dreams.
Like, I love that. Also, I love that he assumes it was his dream that Sam intruded on and not the other way around. But also, like,
to be fair,
as if that was his first assumption that they just weirdly shared a dream.
I don't think it's that far, because psychic Sam.
Oh, okay,
Sam is known for having weird dream-related powers.
Okay.
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Dean assumes that some sort of weird dream-related powers are happening to Sam again. Like,
okay,
it's happened before. There's precedent.
I'll give you that. Anywho, I think that was everything that I wanted to touch on. Did you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, you saying I'll give you that as if it's not a valid fucking theory is really insulting to me and my intelligence.
I'm so sorry.
Like, this is an evidence-based theory based on fact.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be so
flippant. I haven't watched 100 hours of this goddamn show.
More.
For you to tell me that my opinions aren't valid.
I'm not telling you your opinions aren't valid.
For you to invalidate my facts that I'm bringing to this podcast right now.
I'm so sorry for undervaluing your input, Jamie. I'll never do it again.
You better not.
It was like a fucking threat. Okay. Did you have any other...
I'm just saying you should watch your back.
Okay. Fuck. Did you poison my lunch? Damn. Okay. Did you have any other thoughts, feelings?
I think I'm all done for the day.
All right. Cool. So that brings us to the end of the episode. How would you rate episode 17, season 6, My Heart Will Go On, out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it a 4.
Oh, okay, that's fun.
Very fun. I can't really nitpick too much wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like we're finally starting to, like, pick up the pace with the overarching plot, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like we're finally starting to get at least, like, a little bit of payoff. Which...
Well, we're 4 episodes from the end of the season. So, a 4 out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Perfect, sounds good. Next week's episode is called Frontierland. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, fears, or predictions?
I feel like Frontierland is a land at Disneyland. So,
you're imagining, like, Hollywood Babylon, but kind Disney.
Of, yeah. Like a kid's version of a Western movie.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Like, I don't know how to put it into words, but I'm expecting some sort of, like, cowboy sort of... I know it's not the cowboy episode. I know that's Tombstone. I have been spoiled at least...
Partially.
That is the cowboy episode. But Frontierland does sound like some sort of cowboys. Maybe Apocalypse? I feel like Frontierland is an Apocalypse reference as well.
I think Frontierland is a reference to a movie that I've never seen. If you want to Google it, then I'm not going to stop
you. Okay, I'm Googling it. Okay, so Frontierland is a Disneyland park.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, so the American frontier. Yeah, so cowboys.
Mm.
Yeah, so I wasn't wrong about that. I think it's cowboys, but in a distinctly apocalyptic way.
Do you mean like dystopian cowboys? Because I'm trying to imagine apocalyptic cowboys and I'm kind of coming up empty.
Firefly?
I've never seen Firefly.
Ooh.
We'll pop that on the list of possible podcasts.
Yeah. Obviously not, because that's space cowboys, but like some of the vibes in that are kind of a little bit like dystopian, like apocalyptic.
Okay. We will find out next week. But do you have any thoughts on, do you think Cass might be in next week's episode?
I think yes. Like, okay. It's very clear that Cass's machinations are starting to come into play and infect the boys, so I feel like we're going to get a continuation of that next week. Like, they're getting down to the pointy end.
Okay, so that just about does it for today's episode. If you wanted to get in touch with us outside of listening to us waffle on in your ears for an hour or so every week, you can always find us on any of our social medias. All of the links will be in the description below. And possible topics of conversation could include... Which fan favorite character would you like to be seen as evil and why?
If you were to undo a historical like
event.
Tragedy or event to alter the timeline to get souls, what would you pick?
Or if you were just trying to mint souls, not necessarily in the same way that they did in this episode, but like if you were trying to amass more souls, what would you do?
How are you achieving that goal?
Yeah. You can put ethics aside for this one. Yeah. It's more of a theoretical question.
Let's go what's our way close to the sun.
Just like Icarus, because you know how well that worked out for him. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed listening as much as we have had fun recording. And we'll have you back next week for Frontierland with Hannah from Raising Perdition.
Bye.
Bye.